This is the King Chasing Podcast. Here's your host, Richard Martin.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the newest episode of the King Chasing Podcast. I'm your host, Richard Martin. It's wild to believe this will be our last podcast of 2024, and our last one is going to be a good one. In today's episode, I talk to Grant Clayton, Partnership Development Manager for World Relief Upstate South Carolina and Associate Pastor at Redeemer City Church in Greenville, South Carolina. Grant is a graduate of Coastal Carolina University, where he was the place kicker for the Chanticleers in 2011 and 2012. Grant ranks 8th all-time in field goal percentage, 8th all-time in field goals made, and 7th all-time in point after touchdown kicks made in the history of the Coastal Carolina football program. Grant was also a member of the 2012 Big South Championship team that advanced to the second round of the FCS playoffs. Grant works with World Relief Upstate South Carolina, which is an organization that partners with local churches to help refugees from foreign countries establish a new life in their local communities in the United States. Don't forget, you can listen to every episode of the King Chasing Podcast at thenccaa.org/podcast on YouTube, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Thanks for tuning in, and now it's time for the newest episode of the King Chasing Podcast. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the newest episode of the King Chasing Podcast. I'm joined now by Grant Clayton. Grant, thanks so much for taking time out of your day and joining us today.
Yeah, absolutely, Richard. Pumped to be here, man.
So, Grant, we'll just kind of get started with how we really asked every guest, you know, what was your faith journey like growing up? When did you come to know the Lord?
Yeah, man. Great question. So I grew up in South Carolina, grew up in a local church, but did not have a relationship with the Lord. Of course, would have thought and assumed I did that entire time. And man, it wasn't until college. I was a place kicker for Coastal Carolina, and a fellow wide receiver on the team asked me if I'd want to read through the Book of Mark with him there in summer camp leading up to fall for the season. And for some reason, I said yes. And it was through reading the Word of God that I came alive to God and trusted in Jesus, had new affections, had new desires, had a new life. And it kind of almost happened overnight there, reading through the Word of God with my buddy, who's now still one of my best friends today, all these years later. It was in that season that I was able to then look back in my first 18 years of life and realize that my life had nothing to do with Jesus, even though I went to church and even though I said I believed, and even had some semblance of what you could call some religious type of lifestyle. But at the end of the day, I was a horrible sinner and could see that I'd rebelled against God, rebelled against, honestly, all forms of authority in my life. I was super selfish, full of anger and rage, into all the things you can imagine a typical high school kid getting into. I was into, but it wasn't until I came to faith that I was able to look back and even recognize, honestly, for the first time, that my life was a contradiction. So I'm thankful. In the same breath, it was like grace that awoke me to my past and my simple lifestyle, but it was also that grace that awoke me to embrace Jesus in that same season. So it was really cool.
That's awesome. And so you mentioned you played football at Coastal Carolina.
Yeah.
You know, when did you kind of start playing football? And, you know, you play a different position than most people, kicker. How did you kind of fall into playing kicker and, you know, getting good enough to get a Division I scholarship?
Yeah, man. So I, as a kid, I don't know, really young, if I was in the front yard playing, I didn't have a ton of friends in my neighborhood. So I was always that one little kid playing by myself in the front yard, throwing the ball to myself, you know, kicking the ball. Like, I would basically have these fake field goals in these trees. I would, you know, kick through, and I loved doing kickoffs and messing around in the yard. And we had a small yard, so I ended up like kicking through multiple neighbors' yards, you know. And so I was always, as a kid, messing around in the front yard. I grew up playing a ton of soccer. So played a lot of soccer, played a lot of club ball, school ball, did a lot of traveling. And so was always obsessed with when I played football, kicking. And so it was that kind of started the passion for kicking specifically, and loved the game. Grew up in South Carolina, big football state, so loved the game. And it was in high school, my sophomore year, when I tried out for the football team the first time. So I think it was that same fall semester that I was playing on two different soccer teams, club teams. I was playing for our Olympic development team at a state level for South Carolina, our ODP club, and then club ball, and then soccer or football at the same time. So it was a busy, busy fall. But I can still vividly remember, my first game there that year. And I can remember it being at Columbia High School, not far from AC4 where I went, right downtown in Columbia, South Carolina, where I'm from. And so just a lot of vivid core memories from that time. But that was kind of the beginning of the football journey.
Awesome. And so, kicker is a very different position, I think, than most people know about football. They take a lot of criticism, but of course it's a hard position to play. How did you kind of have to prepare yourself for your games, or if you had like a high pressure kick coming up, both in high school and college, how did you kind of like mentally and physically kind of prepare yourself for that?
Yeah, no, for sure. Man, I'm thinking back, like, I think a lot of it, I'm probably thankful that I was young and ignorant and like in a prideful, confident way, because in that situation, you kind of handle things so differently. Now, 15 years later, I'm more timid and anxious and fearful, and like life has got a hold of me, and I realize how hard, life is, and I'm like have to like more mentally prepare even for things now. But at that time in college, there's so much of it was just the competitive nature kind of in you, and some of the confidence you have, and some of that sport just mentality and that heart that comes out and thrives in those moments and looks forward to those moments and enjoys those moments, and really just so part of the passion, I think, of the game that carries you through. And it's weird, when you play. I've told people before, honestly, I probably had more nerves at like a high school level, these small intimate crowds with maybe 1,000 people there, because you probably know half of them there, When you get to college, my first ever college football game was playing at Austin, in Austin, Texas, against Colt McCoy and Jordan Shipley. And those boys, they went on to make a national championship run that year. And I was a starting kicker as a freshman, kicking off in front of 105,000 people in Austin, Texas. And it's like you almost don't even feel it at that level, because it's 100,000 people. It's a big blur, and you don't know anybody there. And so it's like it just kind of happens, and you get caught up in the game. But then in those intimate small crowds where there's 1,000 people, it honestly, I found myself more nervous in those moments than I did in those bigger environments. So I know that's not necessarily answering your question, but I think some of it is just, you're caught up in the moment, and at that age, you love it.
Awesome. And so, like I said, you started your college career. You actually started at Louisiana Monroe, came back to South Carolina, go to Coastal Carolina. What was the kind of the decision-making process and coming back home to play at down, basically down the beach with Coastal Carolina?
Yeah, man. Yeah. So looking back on it, I'm thankful now as a Christian, follower of Jesus, and one who believes in God's providence and God's sovereignty and control of all aspects of our life. And at the time when I was in Monroe, I was not a Christian. I became a follower of Jesus at Coastal that next year, that next fall semester leading into football camp there. And so that first year as a freshman playing and starting at Monroe, man, a lot of the reasons that I wanted to get back home were, so back to my anger that I mentioned already, man, I was angry. I was sinful. I was rebellious. I dishonored and disrespected, didn't get along with fellow players and coaches at Monroe. A lot of that was my own sin problem. Man, I was dating someone back at the time in South Carolina, 12 hours away, that I missed. And so I was super homesick and lonely. Wrestling, I even remember, I think the Lord preparing my heart to engage and meet him, because there was times where I was so lonely, and sitting there in a dorm room in Louisiana with knowing no one in the entire state, you know what I mean? And thinking to myself, like, man, kind of crying out to God in a sense, like so desperate. And I can vividly remember those times. And it was almost like God was preparing myself through revealing how lonely I was, how distant and sinful I was, how selfish I was. And in that season, but inevitably all those factors and variables kind of led to me just throwing up my hands and being like, I'm going back, somewhere closer to home. And actually it was kind of in that same season, I was to a point where I wasn't even sure if I wanted to continue and play football, but ended up at Coastal, ended up on full scholarship there, ended up playing and kicking and getting some playing time those last few years. And so I'm super, super thankful. All that to say, I think what led me to come to Coastal was more things I'm not proud of now. They were more things I would never look back and be like, hey, this is how you make a decision. They were more reactions from my own sin and some of the things I was going through in my life. But I'm thankful that God did lead me there, because that's where Morgan, my buddy who was a wide receiver, asked me if I wanted to get in the Bible and read the Word. And not just Morgan, but there was a couple guys. I mean, our punter on our special teams unit, our long snapper, our other kicker who was a senior. I was just surrounded. All these guys were believers. So I went from a special teams unit in Monroe where no one was a believer on my team, like in my special teams unit. And then I go to Coastal and it's like almost everyone on that special teams unit was a believer. It's just amazing the transition and how God was working that in my life.
That's awesome. And so you mentioned, go to Coastal Carolina, you're surrounded by those believers. A lot of course, the NCAA, all schools are Christian colleges. You were different. Mm-hmm. You went to two different state schools. So maybe there's a lot of influences going on around there. What would your advice be? Of course, once you heard, from God and accepted God, once you heard, you started sharing it with others on campus. What would your advice be to kind of athletes who maybe are timid, even at their Christian universities, to share the gospel with those who they know maybe they're not a believer, or even just to, share the gospel with anybody?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah, man, I think if anything, like in that time when you're in college, and either whether you're in a sports environment or small campus, whatever university you may go to, your life is seen and known and on display 24/7 by everyone around you, because you're always with people, you're always with your teammates, you're always with your classmates, you're always in the food hall, you're always in study hall, you're in the treatment hall getting when you're banged up, getting taken care of. I mean, you're just always around people. And so in some sense, the encouragement would be like, you can't hide. When you get older, you become an adult, you get life, you get busy, you go to work, you come home, you kind of can recluse and hide if you want to. But man, when you're in that space and the season of life that a lot of the student athletes are, that you're talking about and asking that question, your life can't hide. And so it's kind of, in one sense, man, just be free, knowing that God is graciously exposing you constantly to others, just to be free to be yourself, to be a light, to not overthink it, but just try to follow Jesus day by day. And knowing that those simple things day by day of trusting in him and making much of him, man, it's going to be a huge impact and set the stage to where when you do gather up some courage to share and talk about Jesus, it's not going to feel awkward or like a contradiction, because, you're kind of already immersed in these groups and these communities on your campus. And so, man, just a simple encouragement of just don't overthink it, and know that when the time comes, you won't regret it if you gather up the courage and talk about Jesus. And it's always a refreshment to our own heart when we do so. But even if you do, and there's no, if you do for kind of, recluse and hide, there's no condemnation, and may you live to see another day. And that's the cool thing about being on these sports teams, man, you're going to be around them so much. May you live to see another day. And so just keep carrying on.
That's awesome. And then, no worries. Talk about your playing career. Coastal was part of a Big South championship team, made it to the second round of the FCS playoffs one year. I ask this question to a lot of people, and they say it's not really the games you remember, but it's also the time of your teammates. What's kind of your favorite memories you've had during your time at Coastal Carolina?
Oh, gosh. Favorite memories that I have. Probably me and my holder, who was our starting punter as well. We are still good friends today, but we were just goons, and I can remember so many dumb things and that we did. And just like, we were always gooning around, and we were always not taking things serious as they should have been. And some of the defensive staff, man, they would get so mad at us. Here's these two little punters and kickers like messing around all the time, laughing, and they're trying to get, their boys ready and serious. And, the defensive staff, bro, you got the DB coach, the linebacker coach, they're always like serious, and trying to keep everybody in line. And And I'll spare the details, but me and my buddy, we were roommates every Friday night, and we were in a hotel, and we were like doing something we shouldn't have been doing. And our DB coach rolled up in our room, busted in our hotel room, and with just straight face as possible. And he said something like, and this is a more appropriate way of saying what he said, you better not miss any field goals tomorrow. You better, like, you know, because we were acting like, you know, fools on a Friday night before a game. And I'm thankful the next day I didn't miss any field goals and we had a good day. But if I did, it would have been horrible. It would have not ended well. I mean, so man, certainly memories like that where, you know, just you're having fun with the guys and you know, probably not being as serious as you should have been, but it's at the end of the day, it's okay. And ends out okay. But man, a lot of small memories like that. And then just the gift, I think too, one cool thing that most non-student athletes don't get. I love traveling every weekend and going to a new campus, going to a new city. You know, you get to see so much of the country playing sports and you know, that's just a lot of fun and that's unique. So, and it was always fall football season. So love getting to travel in the fall and seeing a lot of different universities and different places. That was always cool as well.
And so after college, you move up to the Raleigh area and you get involved with a church and you end up moving down to Greenville and help start in church. And for those who don't know, me and Grant know each other because I go to the same church. And Grant is at Redeemer City Church, where he's one of the lay elders, one of the associate pastors there. And so how did that kind of come about to kind of take that step and move to Greenville and to, become a pastor and start that process with a new church in a new city?
For sure. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, in God's kindness over the last however many years of walking with Jesus, there's been a stirring, I think, and a desire for pastoral ministry just in my own life and just kind of wrestle through calling. Desire for the nations too. We've kind of wrestled back and forth, my family, of like, man, you know, are we to go overseas and are we to stay and be faithful here? And I would say over years and years of fleshing that out with others and wrestling with others that know me and know our giftings and kind of speak into our lives. And again, and then at the end of the day too, trusting just in God's providence and opportunities that show forth themselves and just kind of walking faithfully and hoping that, man, this is, man, God, that's what you've called me to. And we're just going to trust you in it. And I say all that to say, like when we came to Greenville, it was not like we were like, oh my gosh, 110% feel great about it. It was more of like, okay, God, I'm just trusting you're opening this door and you're going to use this. And when we moved down, I knew from talking to our lead pastor that, man, it was a process that he wanted me to begin this pastoral process of like a year's worth of time of like praying and writing and reading and collaborating with others and really kind of exploring this calling. And sure enough, in that process, it felt affirmed and affirmed by others. And so the Lord did eventually call me in to being a pastor here at the local church. But man, it was just a journey of like day by day, you know, just simply keep walking and trusting. And, you know, when you have these big life decisions, sometimes they can feel debilitating and you kind of freak out and maybe ever think you don't know what God's will is. But at the end of the day, life is more made up of moments. And it's just like, okay, you know, I don't know where I'm going to be in 6 months or 10 years, but can I every moment just be faithful and be open and moving in this direction that we feel like God is calling us. And man, it was just a lot of that that played into coming here and what I'm doing now. It was no vision in the middle of the night or line in the sand moment. It was just okay, I feel like this is what God is doing.
Awesome. And so also you work with World Relief upstate South Carolina. For those who may not know what World Relief is, can you kind of explain that and explain what you do with World Relief?
Yeah, man. So World Relief is a evangelical organization that, man, loves partnering with local churches to serve and welcome refugees to the United States. They do a lot more than that, but that's the big chunk of the work that we do is resettling refugees, connecting them to local churches, helping them get immersed in the community and feel welcome here. You know, our heart is that, man, the local church would kind of be the face of welcome, the face of Jesus to these outcasts of the nations, you know, that are forced to leave their home from who knows what, you know, war, famine, persecution. And so, man, we get to do that as an organization. We have offices all over the United States and even some international offices. And the one we have here in the upstate of South Carolina, I happen to work at. And it's just a gift. It's a gift to, again, something I mentioned earlier, back and forth between a heart for going overseas for us personally and giving our heart to the nations with this pastoral ministry. And we were kind of back and forth wrestling and ended up coming here to be a pastor, but somehow got plugged in with the nations here, even in Greenville, to where God is bringing people from all over the world, from Central Asia and Northern Africa and South America, and they're coming here to Greenville. And so it's kind of cool how God and his kindness worked it out to where I get to do a little bit of both of what I'm passionate about.
Great. And so just want to close out with, of course, it is the Christmas season. Everybody needs some help or maybe needs something this holiday season. But what's a way, people could maybe help out with World Relief, not just in the Christmas season, but just throughout the year?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah, man, I think I'm not sure the context of where your hearers are coming from. So I would just say one of the biggest things would be, man, prayer. Man, prayer that like the local church would embrace the nations that are coming here, and just when you think through even the life of Jesus, when Jesus came and Herod obviously gave the order to kill all young boys under 2 years old, because Herod's like desperately trying to kill this king, this Messiah figure that he's nervous about, kind of taking his own power. And so tragically, they go into these regions where prophetically the prophet says that he'll be born, and they're going into Bethlehem and they're killing young boys. And it's this horrible situation. And so Mary and Joseph take Jesus and they flee into Egypt, and they stay there for a while in exile before that season passes, and then they eventually come back. And we don't know much about, the scriptures don't go into detail how long they're in Egypt, what their family did there, but it's amazing to think about, though, they were refugees in Egypt. They had to flee and seek refuge in another foreign sovereign nation. And so thinking about Mary and Joseph, who are fearing persecution for their son in the order of Herod, and that forced their family to pick up and leave and go, walk kind of southwest into Egypt. And just imagining him living out that journey as a young boy, and then just realizing that, man, that's so much of what our families face. They're coming here to the United States not because they want to, but because they're fleeing something similar, some form of persecution. And so, man, that being said, like if the local church was mindful of that and just prayerful more frequently of like, man, how can we kind of empathize and welcome people that are coming here from all over the world from broken stories. And man, we just need prayer for that tremendously, for the churches we partner with and for the church just in general, the Big C Church here in the United States.
Awesome. Sounds good. Well, thanks, Grant, so
Yeah.
much for joining
Yeah.
us today and kind of sharing, your life story and sharing about
Yeah.
your work. And yeah, thank you so much for hopping on the podcast today.
For sure. Appreciate it, Richard. Thanks, man.
Thanks for tuning in to the newest episode of the King Chasing Podcast. I want to thank my guest, Grant Clayton, for joining us today. We talked about how he found the Lord during his time at Coastal Carolina, his favorite memories playing for the Chanticleers, and the step of faith it took to move to Greenville as a pastor of a church plant and to work with World Relief Upstate here in Greenville, South Carolina. Once again, folks, this is our final episode of 2024. We thank you so much for joining us this year, and we'll have more episodes to come in 2025. Don't forget to listen to past episodes of the King Chasing Podcast at the nccaa.org/podcast on YouTube or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. Thanks for tuning in. Have a Merry Christmas and a happy holiday season, and we'll see you in the new year.